Welcome to Legends of the Hall, the podcast centered around the Pro Rodeo Hall of Fame in Colorado Springs, telling the stories of the greatest stars in the history of Pro Rodeo. Today, an encore presentation with a pair of Hall of Fame inductees and world champions, Paul Tierney from South Dakota and the Lone Roo from Australia, Dave Appleton. This is professional rodeo announcer Steve Kenyon. Legends of the Hall is being sponsored by Wrangler, the official Western Wear Pro Rodeo. Long live Cowboys. In just a moment, Paul Tierney and Dave Appleton.
Hey, y'all, this is Cody Johnson. When I was starting out in music, most every radio station and venue I went to told me no. At that point, you got two options: tuck tail and quit, or buckle down and fight. Well, I'm a fighter, not a quitter. And that's why I wear Wrangler jeans and shirts. Their toughness and style are legendary. They're an iconic symbol of the West, and there's no quitting them either. Life's not about the destination. It's about the journey. And if I'm going to enjoy the ride, I'm riding in Wrangler. Wrangler, long live Cowboys.
Hi, I'm Trevor Brazil, 26-time PRCA World Champion Cowboy. If you want to keep your horse at the top of their game, you need to have the Aquinity Edge. I use Aquinity because it's all about the horse. It helps with the longevity and overall maintenance of my horses. Team Aquinity is challenging you to try Aquinity Horse XL for the next 30 days and beyond. Watch how your horse transforms both in look and feel. To do this, go to teamaquinity.com to get started.
This week on Legends of the Hall, an encore presentation. A couple of weeks ago, Paul David Tierney won his third timed event championship at the Lazy E Arena in Guthrie, Oklahoma. One of the guys that he could catch on the record list of big winners at the timed event is his father, Paul Tierney. He's won four. Paul Tierney was a tie-down roping world champion in 1979. He was an all-around champion in 1980, 2008, an inductee into the Pro Rodeo Hall of Fame. The first half of our show this week will feature Paul Tierney. I had a chance to visit with him a couple of weeks ago. He was literally on the side of the road in Arizona in a spot where he had good service. And we'll also spend a little bit of time with Dave Appleton, 2016 Hall of Fame inductee, and hear what both of them have to say. Before we get to our interviews this week, I wanted to tell you something about what's coming up at the Pro Rodeo Hall of Fame. Defensive standout Carl Mecklenburg, a member of the Denver Broncos Ring of Fame, will be the featured speaker at the Pro Rodeo Hall of Fame's 2024 Spring Sports Fundraiser. That's May 16th in Colorado Springs. This will be an evening with Mecklenburg, who was a star for the Denver Broncos from 1983 through 1994, played in three Super Bowls, ended his career with 79 quarterback sacks. Was selected to play in the Pro Bowl six times. Mecklenburg was an unknown 12th round draft choice out of Minnesota, and then he blossomed into a superstar. Mecklenburg got his first start for the Broncos in 1985 and proved to be a versatile star, playing seven different positions during his career, including making highlight reel hits from the linebacker position on multiple occasions. You can go to ProRodeoHallOfFame.com and get all the details. That will be May the 16th, the Pro Rodeo Hall of Fame's 2024 Spring Sports Fundraiser in Colorado Springs, Colorado. So let's get to it with our featured guests, two of them this week. First off, Paul Tierney of Arizona. Arizona really is, I mean, I think most of the people in the rodeo community kind of understand in the wintertime there's a bunch going on down there, but I took my family down there to barrel race, gosh, 10 or 15 years ago now, and I was just amazed at the number of people that were there, and that was 10 or 15 years ago.
Yeah, well, it's quadrupled now. It's really amazing how many. I just come from a roping where they had 150 in the 10 and the 12 and 420 in the 9.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
That's amazing. So let me take you back, Paul. 2008, you're inducted into the Pro Rodeo Hall of Fame. Your Hall of Fame induction bio says, the world tie-down roping champion in 1979, Tierney put together an even better season in 1980 to end Tom Ferguson's six-year reign as the all-around champion and become the second rodeo cowboy to surpass $100,000 in earnings during a single season. Boy, the money's gone up a little bit since then, hasn't it?
I was going to say, I don't know. That's a little embarrassing, isn't it?
Well, it is. No, it's not, because you also didn't have to pay $5 a gallon for diesel. And right. You know, I mean, things progress. The kids today, you helped to build the foundation for it, I think. How do you feel about that?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I can remember when I did an interview down in Oklahoma City in 1980, and at that particular time, the guy said, "You're really not a drinking, brawling cowboy, are you?" And I said, no, really, I'm not a drinking, brawling cowboy. I try to keep myself in shape. I play tennis whenever I'm on the road, and I rope wherever I can, and I ride my horses and attend the business, and I don't drink. We had that era about us in the 60s coming in the early 70s, but I think in the late 70s and the 80s, it started to disappear, and they knew that people are starting to take this a lot more serious. And I think it really upped the grade of what people thought of the Cowboys.
I was going to ask if you felt like Rodeo Cowboys kind of got a bum rap back at that time, because there was some athleticism in everything that I've been told, and I really was not involved in the sport then, Paul. So you can tell me if I'm completely off base here. Everything I've been told is that somewhere in there, athleticism really started to replace the old stereotype of the guy that, you know, went out all night Saturday night and all those kinds of things. Am I right?
Well, you're right. I mean, it just, I think when they quit having the guys come like to Belle Fouche and be there, they were there for 4 days. Camped out, they kind of got a little bit of camp fever, and they started, you know, there's a lot more drinking going on. There's a lot more fighting going on. And, you know, as they quit having those type of rodeos where you'd get two and three or four head of, you know, rodeos got bigger. Well, then they got to where they got to be one headers. Well, then, you know, we started seeing where these guys were going to 120, 130, 40 rodeos a year. Well, you can't be, you know, you can't be on the sideline with a headache.
Yeah.
You know, if you're going to do that kind of rodeo, and that's what it evolved into by the late 70s. And these guys were going, I know, you know, Tom and myself, Chris Liebert, Johnny Jones, Dave Brock, there's about five or six of those guys all trying to win the all around and winning as much as they could in their single events. And they were all going to 130 to 150 rodeos a year.
You were second in the tie-down roping standings in 1980, fourth in the steer wrestling, $100,000, $105,000 in the steer wrestling in 1980. You were the reserve all-around champion in 77 and 79, and you spent a lot of time butting heads with Tom Ferguson in your career.
Oh, absolutely. You know, Tom was always the bar, you know, and so you, you know, you're always shooting for the bar and shooting for Tom, so he was always the target. And that's just what it was. So, if he was going to go to 130, I was going to try to go to 135.
Wow. They didn't limit back then. There are limits now. There were no limits back then.
Yeah. Well, you know, I don't know what it was, you know, the travel, whatever it was, but I mean, good or bad, whatever. I mean, it's fine with me the way it is. You know, the thing about going to a few more rodeos for those guys that are down there a little bit, you know, trying to get into the top 15, that was always the thing, you know. If you wanted to rodeo and get out there and do some rodeo, and the guys on top always just wanted to go to 80 and you wanted to go to 120, well, you had a few more chances. You had a few more bullets.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it got you in there. It got you into the top 15. Well, then, you know, you had more of a, yeah, I can do this type attitude. And so, I mean, there is that part of it too, but it's not there anymore. And so, you know, you just, you got to be the cream.
Yeah.
if you look at that, I don't know that there's any more than about three or four guys now that come in there and fall out, about three or four, and that's it in those events.
Yeah. I agree with that.
And that's what they, and Steve, that's kind of what they wanted. They wanted these guys to be in there. They wanted them to be household names, and they have got accomplished pretty much what they want. You know, there's a lot more people that know about the guys that are winning all the time. They really do, because that's who they're seeing all the time. So, I mean, mission accomplished. I mean, and I don't think it's a bad thing. I really don't. You know, it's just tougher. I just see that it's tougher to get into that top 15. It's just tougher.
Sports are defined by their superstars, and I don't care which sport it is. You know, you talked about playing tennis when you're on the road in the late 70s, early 80s. Tennis players were some big names. Out there. You go through football history. You look at today. Patrick Mahomes is as big a name. He'd get it back to the Super Bowl as anybody. You know, he's on every other commercial, it seems like, on TV anymore. But,
right.
I mean, you know, and Stetson Wright has stepped into that role in professional rodeo. Caleb Driggers has stepped into that role.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Your fellow South Dakotan, Lisa Lockhart, I think has stepped into that role a little bit.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. You bet.
Take me back to 1979. You win the tie-down roping world title. Full disclosure, I kind of cheated a little bit. I called Paul's daughter, Jordan, who was Miss Rodeo America a couple of years ago. I said, all right, you're interviewing your dad. What are you going to ask him about? And she said I needed to make sure I asked you about a horse. Is it the horse that you won that world title on in 1979? Is that what she was talking about?
Well, we started out with that horse in 1976. I bought him at the Black Hill Stock Show sale up there for $460. And I was going to make a practice horse out of him, and that went kind of okay. And then as time went on, he got better and he got better. And so then I started hauling him in the summer of 76. And then he really wasn't ready to go in 77. So I had another horse that I invested in. And then we turned around in 78. And then we sent him with my brother and a real close friend to some amateur rodeos in 77, and then I cracked him out in 78, and I used him the last half of the year, and also I used him at the national finals that year, and then in 79, then I had a big year on him in 79, then he was ready to go.
Yeah. How much has the caliber of horses in the timed events changed over time? I feel like the livestock, the bucking horses and the bulls, the elite then would still be elite now, but there's just a lot more of them. How has the caliber of horses and the roping and the bulldogging changed over the years, or has it?
Oh, yeah, definitely. The horses, what I notice is, you know, I won a lot back in my day because I was a good cowboy, but nowadays you have to be a good horseman, plus you have to be a good cowboy. In my books right now, Haven Midget is one of those guys in the calf roping. He does his own training, and he's a really good cowboy, and he's really a good horseman. And I see that more and more the last 20 years, that these horses are not only their athleticism is so much better than it was. So much better.
Yeah.
And then they've invested a lot more time in getting these horses trained better. And even though maybe the guys don't train them, you know, they maybe know how to help them or maintain them, or they know how to get help. But there again, it's the horsemanship plus the cowboy ability and the try and the hard work and the day in and day out. But I just see there's more of a mix of it now in the last 20 years than there was in my day.
You know, the other thing that's happening, Paul, is, and I don't know if you've ever thought of dipping your toe into these waters, or if you're anybody in your family has, but we're the timed event horses. My family's in the barrel racing business. There've been barrel racing futurities around for a long time, but now you've got the team roping futurities where these horses are getting a chance to get off to a younger start, or they're starting to happen in the tie down roping too. And that gives them a whole earlier start in life, I think, doesn't it?
Oh, sure. You know, that they don't have to wait to be, you know, back in my day, you know, you probably didn't want to ride a horse unless he was at least 10, 12, 11, 12 years old. Nowadays you've got 6 year olds that are just as good as a 16 year old. I mean, the training starts so much earlier, and there's a lot of guys that have invested a lot of time in learning more about the training, and it's kind of what I call a very good after rodeo occupation for these guys, maybe for some guys that never did quite make it, and you know, they've given 5, 6, 7 years of their life and they need to get to doing something else. Those guys are really, you know, if they've invested time in horsemanship, they can really take this and really run with this fraternity thing in the calf rope and the team rope. And it does. It's just altogether another avenue for those guys.
Whose horses did you ride when you were bulldogging? Were they yours, or were you mounting out? Did you have a preferred hazer? How did that work for you?
Well, you know, back in the day we had C.R. Jones and Peanuts. He was the horse of the year in 77. And I rode that horse. Stan Williamson had a really good horse. Naturally, the Duvals, you'd get on. They were really good about letting you on, even though you maybe weren't on their team, you could say. But if you needed to ride, you could get on them.
Yeah.
And then there was Gary Green. Gary Green had a really good horse I rode for about 3 years called Reverend. And just different guys in different spots. You know, CR, he quit rodeoing there in the early 80s. And then that's when I kind of rode Gary Green's horse for a while. And so, you know, you have those good horses. They were really good about, you know, you could blow into a rodeo and get on those horses. And I don't know that it's really like that today as much as it was back then. But about anybody could ride about anybody's horse if you needed to ride him.
Yeah. Yeah. And that still happens a lot today.
I think it probably does. I'm out of that loop, so I don't really know how that loop works.
Yeah. Let me ask you about growing up. This is the other thing Jordan told me, is that you did not necessarily come from a rodeo family. You grew up on a farm/ranch in Nebraska. And were you the first person in your family that really took an interest in getting involved in rodeo?
Well, I had an older brother. My dad, dad bought him a horse there again, just a kind of a calf horse. She was a calf horse. But he got killed in a tractor accident on the ranch at 15. And then I was the next one to pick it up, and he was 10 years older than me. And so I don't know how I picked it up, but then, you know, the rope just became, you know, kind of like my pajamas every day. It's kind of weird how that all happened, but I was very, very into the rope. And then I had a cousin that lived up the road about 3 miles, and he roped as much as I did. And then he was 3 years older than me. So we were very involved in getting better as, you know, middle schoolers and teenagers. And we roped, I tell you what, we roped every night is what we did. We got done milking cows about 7 o'clock, and then we'd rope till dark every night.
You worked 6 events in college. How did you settle on roping calves and bulldogging steers for a living?
Well, you know, I just knew that's where my expertise was. I got a lot more accomplished in the timed events. So I rode broncs and bulls. The barebacks didn't last very long. They hurt my arm, my elbow. You know, I couldn't flank as good, so I quit that early. But the saddle broncs I rode right up till I got my PRCA card in the amateurs. The bulls I quit early. They were just, you know, there's no need to go into a rodeo with that much fear in your bones. So I quit the Bronx when I got my card, just because I knew, you know, I knew this was where I needed to land, was in the timed events. Even being a little smaller steer wrestler, back in my day, or back in those days, you could say, that's, if you wanted to win the all around, you couldn't team rope and rope calves. You had to bulldog, you had to steer wrestle and rope calves.
Hmm.
You know, back in my day, it wasn't even a standard event.
Yeah.
And then it finally got standardized. Well, then they didn't even have to, you know, they could even put up half the purse, or I even seen them put $1,000 up, and then they might put $5,000 up in the other events and $1,000 up in the team rope. And then they'd split it $500 each side.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what it was until Clay and Jake come along and got things rolling. And, you know, then we've had some rodeos out there, Dick and JD Yates. They were the first example there at Pueblo. They had as much money in the team rope and on both sides.
Yeah.
And that was one of the first rodeos back, I think, in the early 90s that put up money, when they started making it a standard event. And then you had to at least, you know, put up as much in the purse and the team roping, but they put up, that will be in the first one. And I know it had a lot to do with Dick and JD Yates.
Let me ask you, before I let you go, and I promised you I wouldn't keep you on the side of the road forever tonight, Paul, and I really appreciate your time. I want to talk to you a little bit about your family. Your wife, Robin, she was a rodeo queen, right?
Yeah, she was runner-up to Miss Rodeo America, and she's Miss Rodeo South Dakota. And she did awful good in her barrel race, and she about qualified for the finals. She was top 25 in the world in the barrel racing. The year after she won, got done with her crown. And so she's been very well accomplished, and she's getting better every day in every way with her horses and her horsemanship and her barrel racing.
Huh. Is she competing down in Arizona while you're off roping?
When I was roping today, she was at a barrel race. And it'll happen that way tomorrow. And also on Thursday, they have a barrel race. So yeah. Yeah, she don't go with me to the team ropes. She jumps in with her barrel racing friends and goes to a barrel race.
Got it. Your daughter, Jordan, I got to know Jordan during her time as Miss Rodeo America. She was the person who was Miss Rodeo America during the COVID year and ended up wearing that crown for 2 years. You're about to inherit a son-in-law, Taylor Santos. But I told you before we started this interview that I really wanted to compliment you on your kids. I've gotten to know Jordan, Jess, Paul David, maybe not as much as Jess and Jordan, but what a great group of young people you and Robin have surrounded yourself with of those three kids.
Well, I'm very proud of the accomplishments. Jess has done really well in the steer roping. He's been right there to win the world. And he's always in the top three or four, top five every year for the last 4 or 5 years. And he takes care of his business real good. He keeps himself mounted on some good horses and does real well. He's a coach there at Altus, Oklahoma. And if anybody ever wants to send their kid to college at Altus, they do a lot of roping. But Jess is a very good, very good hound dog on those kids. So I want to put that plug in there for Jess. He don't let those kids run wild is what I'm trying to say. And Paul David's done real good. His best accomplishment's been a top 30 in the world the last three years and probably even more than that. He won the timed event twice, been runner up twice. Jess has won the timed event, been runner up once, won the timed event. So I'm very proud. I have a daughter that's married to a bulldog and rancher up in Riva. Her name is Amy, and she actually ended up third in the world in the NIRA in the goat tying. Did really well through college, and then there again we have Jordan as Miss Rodeo America. And I just can't hardly tell you. It's hard for me to count the amount of people that come up to me. Like down here in Arizona that have touched and feel over the years, her being in their city or their rodeo and how very proud they are of the how she represented the cowboy world. And she's a goat tire, a team roper, a breakaway roper, and a barrel racer herself. So all my kids understand the industry, the culture that we live in, and I'm very proud of what's going on in the next generation in the Tierney family.
You missed one champion of the timed event when you were talking about Jess and Paul David winning it, and that's Paul. All three of you have won that big event at the Lazy E Arena. I think that's the first time you and I ever met, Paul. I was doing radio at the timed event, and you and Jess and Paul David were all there competing together. How much fun was that for you?
Yeah, that was good. That was toward my latter times. It got to the point down there where I felt like I was a little better off to buy them in the Calcutta than me entering it.
I remember a couple of times watching you try to jump a steer quick and miss. And at the timed event, they give you two jumps. But by the time you catch up with your horse, you're 400 feet down at the other end of the arena. And Paul Tierney had passed his, dare I say it, passed your 60th birthday, and you were still running horses down there at the far end of the arena. You competed there for a long time.
Yeah. My last time there was when I was going to be 60.
Huh.
So that was my last time there.
Was that were you a late addition that year? Am I remembering that right or am I wrong?
That I was what?
A late addition. Somebody couldn't make it and you?
Well, I don't know if it was that year, but I know one year I did cut out on him because I wanted Paul David to get an invitation, and they said there was no opening. So I said, well, then I'm not going to go.
Huh.
And so they invited Paul, and then Trevor got hurt and couldn't come. So then they called me and asked me if I'd come.
That's what I'm remembering that year.
So that's how I got in. I think that's probably how we got all three of us in there, because I wanted to get Paul David in there. It was time for him. And cause he has been raised up for a time such as this. And I told him that, and they said, well, there's no openings. And I said, well, then I ain't coming.
Wow. Before I let you go, I want to ask you about the people you competed with and against. In the all around race, I mean, everybody from Tom Ferguson, were you at the tail end of Mahan's career at all, or was Larry already kind of done in the all around? Of course, he was in the riding events, not the timed events. But I mean, you roped with and against Tom Ferguson and at the timed event all the way through Trevor Brazil. That's quite a group of guys to have a chance to compete with.
Well, the last time I won the timed event, Trevor had to two loop his last steer, and I beat him. Oh, no, he had two attempts. The steer didn't stay down.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what it was. And that was the last time that I won it, which when I was 48.
Hmm. Wow.
And so yeah, Trevor and Jimmy and Leo, all the guys that we competed against in the day and the all around, they were the guys that were at the timed event. Roy, I know I won it one year, Roy won second. Yeah, I mean, they were all there at the timed event for a long time.
Yeah. Last question. Your memories of that day when you went into the Hall of Fame in 2008, what did that mean to you? What do you remember about that?
Well, anytime you get decorated from your peers, that's what makes it special. It's the kind of the memories, you have memories that come back up. And it's very special that that they are admonishing you and your accomplishments, and those are days gone by. I'd quit rodeoing clear back in 87, and so in 2008, and you get decorated like that, it's a very special thing to know that that you get to be up on that level in the Hall of Fame, and you're thought of like that, because when you're going to bed every night as a youngster, and I always read my Tootsville roping guide, and I seen all those guys that were world's champions, and it always comes to a realization that those people are never any more special than you.
Yeah.
So if they can do it, I can do it. Yeah. And that's just one of them things. Now you're up there with the guys that you read about.
That's a great message, especially for young guys. For the kid that's wanting to be a bronc rider and a bull rider is 14 or 15 years old, is looking at Stetson Wright thinking, I want to be him someday. That's a great message to leave that young man with.
Well, Steve, you just have to, they always say you have to figure out what they're doing, and then you have to figure out how to do it just a little bit better.
Yeah.
And then you can beat him and be that guy.
Great advice for success from the Hall of Famer, Paul Tierney. Dave Appleton beat Louis Field for an all-around title in the PRCA by less than $700, the highlight of his career, inducted into the Hall of Fame in 2016. And I had a chance to sit down with Dave Appleton to visit about his life and his career.
Well, it's really, when you stop and you think about it, it is the most special moment you can have in your career. And what I mean by that is, I was lucky enough to win one world championship. You've seen the likes of, Ty Murray's and Trevor Brazil's and all those guys that have won many, many awards throughout their careers. But this is one that you can't go win. And what I mean by that is you are basically, your body of work after you finish rodeoing is one that all of your peers basically say, you deserve a special recognition, because not everybody goes into the Hall of Fame. So it is the ultimate compliment that your body of work was such that your peers felt like you deserved the honor to be inducted into that hall. And that, to me, is the most special honor you can win in rodeo, period.
Dave Appleton, I'm reading from your Hall of Fame bio, Dave. Elite competitor for 15 seasons in the bareback riding and the saddle bronc riding. Won the average in the bareback riding, won the average in the saddle bronc riding. 8-time national finalist in the bareback riding, 3 in the saddle bronc riding. In 1988, and this is one of the questions that I know you've been asked a million times that I warned you about. In 1988, Dave Appleton won the all-around title, beating Louis Field by $644. You told the story of that and kind of behind the scenes, I remember, at your Hall of Fame inductions with you and Louis sitting there basically waiting to find out who won it. Talk about that and kind of reflect back on that.
Well, it was a pretty surreal moment when you think about it. You know, basically, both of us were finished. Both of us had finished competing. Now it was down to the simple math. And at the time, you know, again, it was, you know, computers were there, but they weren't that far along. And both of us were sitting in there. And I think both of us knew that going in, Louis was in the bronc riding as well as the bareback riding. I was just in the bareback riding. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was all said and done. I knew that basically if Louis placed third in the round in the bronc riding, he would win the all round. And then I knew that if he placed fourth in the round in the bronc riding, I'd win the all round. Well, he split third and fourth. And back in those days, there was still time for the judges to adjust their books. And also, well, none of us had factored in on the third and fourth split. So it was going to be the splitting of hairs. So they had to go back. They had to add everything up, dally everything up. And both of us were sitting in the locker room by ourselves. Waiting for the outcome. We were sat in there and basically somebody came in and said, well, we don't know who's won yet. And I said, well, I think maybe y'all should just leave us alone until until you come back and tell us with a real answer. And, you know, we had beer in the locker room for after we were riding. And I remember I went over and I poured two beers and I reached over and I handed Louis a beer. And I said, you know, you're a hell of a competitor. And it's an honor to compete against you, you know, and we'll see where this thing shakes out. And about 10 minutes later, they came back and they said, Dave, you won. And like you said, by a little over $600. So it's a fine margin of error. And, you know, there was not a greater competitor than Louis Field. And to me, I make the joke and I feel this way in a certain way is, you know, we lost him several years ago. I don't necessarily think I beat him. I think I was just in front when the counting stopped. That might be the best way to say it.
Yeah.
Because he was a hell of a competitor.
If you think about it, the next night you could have got, I mean, if there was an extra round there's so many little things, $644 is not a lot.
Not at all. I mean, there are so many stories. In fact, a couple of the committee members that are on the Spanish Fork Rodeo even talked about, you know, once that Louis was out, and Louis loved to hunt. Let me tell you, Louis Field was a great outdoorsman hunter. And I believe they said that he was supposed to go to back to the Cow Palace back then. And he was having too much fun elk hunting and he didn't go back. You know, Steve, you could sit here and say, did you miss a horse out at a rodeo that you were going to win? I mean, on and on and on. But that's rodeo. I mean, it is what it is, and there it is.
I want to ask you about when you first got to the States in 1980. You competed in Australia. You are the story has been told over and over again. You probably, if when you were a kid, really wanted to be a jockey. That didn't work out. And so now here you are riding bareback horses, riding saddle bronc rider horses, competing in Australia. I think riding bulls. Am I right, Dave?
I rode bulls as well down in Australia, yes. So all three events.
Made more money on weekends than you did working on the cattle station during the week. And then you got
is true.
Yeah. Then you got to the States and you got to Western Texas College, which today I think of Greg Rhodes' program at Western Texas College as having kind of a consistent pipeline for Australians. Was it like that back then? Did you start that?
Yes, I was the pioneer of that whole program. And, you know, it was Bob Doty's program back then. And Bob Doty, I owe a tremendous amount of respect to. In fact, to really give it perspective, to put it all, how it all came together. I was living in Bedford, Texas, with a guy named John Paxton, myself and two other Aussies. And we were sitting around one time. The two other Aussies were Ted Cypher and Bruce Watkins. Ted was a bull rider. Bruce was a bronc rider. And we were all, and John had invited us into his home. We're sitting around one day, and the conversation went as simply as this. You ever thought about going to college? And all three of us said no. And John goes, well, you know, you can college rodeo and there's lots of girls. And I said, well, sounds like this is really getting interesting. and really, truly, it was as simple as that. And I was the youngest at the time. I came over here when I was 20. So, you know, this is basically, you know, I was 20 years old and I was still younger. Bruce and Ted were a little bit older. They really weren't that interested. I got interested. John Paxton got on the phone and we talked to a bunch of people, Saul Ross and a bunch of other rodeo coaches. And the only one that really sort of took a half interest was Bob Doty. Bob Doty, basically, I went out, we flew out. John had just gotten his commercial pilot's license and took my life into my hands. And we flew out in a puddle jumper and a Snyder. And we met him, and they didn't really have any money for me to for a scholarship or anything like that. And I met the welding coach, a guy named Sam Walker, and Sam said to me, I'll give you $500. Heck, that was enough for me to get going, and away I went. And Bob took a chance. I had started to do pretty good in the PRCA rodeos, and he took a chance, and away I went to Snyder and enrolled. It took all of my money that I had left. I only came with $5,000. I had about $2,500 left, and took all of my money to pay my tuition.
Yeah.
It was me by myself. My mother is, you know, was still alive at the time, but I'd lost my dad when I was 7. And as soon as I got through enrolling in college and everything else, they said, now we're going to apply for you to get this money back, but you need to pay this now. So away I went, and I said to him, I needed a job. And Bob Doty called around, and in 1980, actually, the oil business of Snyder was an oil town, ranching town. And, you know, oil business was in the dumpers, and called around, asked around. There was only one man that said he'd give me a shot at a job. It was a guy named Jess Everett. And that's his painting right behind me that he painted. Yeah. And funny story. It was the first day of enrolling in college. I'd already enrolled. I'd paid my money. And I told Bob I needed the job. And Jess said, well, we'll give him a chance. I had showed up. And to be the first one at college and cool, I wanted to look cool. I was wearing a pair of flip-flops, a pair of cut-off Wranglers, a Hawaiian shirt, no hat, and I had a mop of hair this big.
Wow.
Jess Everett says, well, bring that boy out here. We'll take a look at him. So picture that in your mind.
Yeah.
We jump in Bob's pickup and we drive out to Jess Everett's place, which is about 3.5-4 miles.
There's a smart aleck in me that wants to ask you what part of that looked cool, but I'm not going to go there at this point.
Well, it gets better. So we drive out there, and on the way out there, Bob Doty looks over at me and he says, now, Dave, he said, I'm going to tell you, Jess Everett is a very tough, hard man. You don't want to lie to him. You want to tell him the truth and everything else. There's another whole sidebar story that we won't even get into there of an experience that Jess and Bob had. So we get out there, we pull up. Jess Everett is standing in a round pen. He's got a little paint colt going around the round pen. He's the epitome of a West Texas rancher.
Right.
Pair of dark horn rimmed glasses, hat rolled up, dirty, dusky, has a big old chew in his mouth. And here I am standing with Bob in my flip-flops and my cutoff and my Hawaiian shirt. Every time that horse would go past the two of us, he'd stop and he'd just pause and look at me. And then he'd go back to watching the horse. Finally, he stops. He comes walking over. And he says to Bob Doty, you know, howdy, Bob. And Bob goes, Mr. Everett, this is that Australian boy, Dave, that I was telling you about that needs a job. And he looks over at me and he introduces himself. I shake his hand. And he said, from Australia. And I said, yes, sir, I am. And he said, do you know much about cattle? Oh, yes, sir, I know all about cattle.
Right.
And I said, grew up working cattle on cattle stations before I came over here. He said, you know how to break a horse? Yes, sir, I know how to break a horse. I've broken horses, got them going. I know how to shoe a horse. Goes through this. He says, do you know how to fix a fence? Oh, yes, sir, I know how to fix a fence. Do the whole nine yards. He gets down to the final thing and he looks at me and he says, do you call yourself a cowboy? And I said, oh, yes, sir, I call myself a cowboy. And he shook his head and he said, well, you sure as hell don't look like one.
Oh, that's funny.
I went to work for that man. He and his wife took me in. I'd go to welding classes from 7:30 until noon. I worked for Jess. Jess took me in. He and his wife were like family to me. He was a painter. We lost him the 9 years in April of this year ago. Jean's still alive. She's 95 years old. Wow. And they were a special part. But that's off the topic. But yes, Bob Doty, I was the pioneer of the Aussies to go to Snyder. Tony Heckscher came after me. There was a whole litany of them. And then when Bob left and went to Tarleton, Greg came in as the rodeo coach. There's been a pipeline of great ones come along since. You know, we've seen them left and right qualifying for the finals since. So I'm very honored to be the instigator, I guess, and I fell into it. I mean, you know, Steve, damn near anything I've done in my life has been something that just I've fallen into. I can't sit here and say to you, as you said at the top, if God hadn't let me be small, I'd have been a jockey.
Right.
Here I am in the United States. You know, I've been here since 1980. My mind's really nothing more than I have been on walkabout with God, and here's where he's led me.
You told me maybe even the day of the Hall of Fame inductions, I forget, or maybe we've had this conversation a couple of times, Dave. You've told me a lot of times that, you know, it just sort of always seemed like when there was something that you needed to be able to take the next step, that thing landed in your life. You know, the story you just told, for example, there was always, you know, when there was a problem, you were always able to find a solution. Somebody was there to help you find the solution. I think I'm right in saying that, aren't I?
Oh, 100%. 100%. And I think that's the greatest thing about rodeo. And really, when you look at it in life, you know, for example, like you talked about, after I got out of school at Snyder, the first year in 82, I was trying to make the finals. And you know, I had Cody Lambert and I had rodeoed together in college. Cody went to Saul Ross. I entered us and Cody made the finals going to 1921 rodeos that year, made the finals in the bronc ride. And then he started rodeoing with Hooter Brown the next year. I was kind of by myself and I ended up midway through the year. I was just outside the top 15. I ended up living down in Stephenville and by chance, got to know TJ Walter very well. It was TJ, Jack, Chick Helms. There was a whole group of people that rodeoed out of there. And honestly, TJ and I didn't know each other that well, but we befriended each other. We started living together. And basically TJ said, let me show you how to make the finals, Dave. He said, I'm on the back end of my career. I'm not interested in trying to make the finals, but I can show you how to get there. And that was huge. Yeah. I mean, I'm a 21 year old, you know, just a dumb kid, 22 years old, trying to make the finals. You don't know how to go, and you're not really sure how to do it. And it took that experienced person to show me the way. And I can go on and on and on throughout my entire life. And I put it back to this, Steve. God always seems to put people in your life at the right time. And if you read the Bible, and I'm not the world's greatest about reading the Bible, but it all happens when it's supposed to happen. And for whatever reason, you know, there are paths that aren't clear. There are paths that have darkness. There are paths that have challenges. But God always puts those paths in front of you. And if you believe and you follow, it'll happen.
Dave, I was doing some homework for this, and I found an article that was written in 2007 by a publication called The Age. I think it's an Australian publication.
It is, yes.
And it goes like this. I just want to read the first paragraph or two. It's been an amazing ride for Dave Appleton, the Queensland kid who wanted to be a jockey but became a world champion cowboy almost 20 years after his history-making triumph in 1988. Again, this was written in 2007. He was the first non-American world champion. Appleton talks with a U.S. accent and is still a winner. As an executive at that time with Dallas Market Center, the world's largest wholesale merchandise outlet, for the past 10 years, he's also been the face of Lone Star Park, a racing complex, Appleton has lived the American dream. He's acted in Dallas, launched a line of Western clothing, and married a former Miss Texas contestant with whom he is bringing up a daughter. Even did a commercial for Swan Lager in Australia, been inducted in the Texas Cowboy Hall of Fame and obviously the Pro Rodeo Hall of Fame. There's a lot of stuff in there that you were able to make happen in your life. I'd forgotten about the Dallas thing being in.
It was, after I had finished rodeoing, I was doing a lot of stuff. I was around a bunch of guys a lot of the football players, and they all had an agent, and the Kim Dawson agency was a very big agency at the time in Dallas, Fort Worth. And, I had gotten on with them. I was trying to do, you know, Steve, I was a guy that was always trying to do something different. Mm-hmm. You know, even going back to I really didn't try to put parameters on what you could and you couldn't do. It was always one of those. I've always been one of those guys. Well, I can do that.
Yeah.
And so somebody had said something about getting an agent doing, and I'd gotten to doing some commercials you know, got into that. And then one day that when Dallas was going on, they cast a scene, in a bar of all things. And they wanted a bunch of cowboys in a bar, playing pool. And it was a game where we were playing pool against Patrick Duffy, you know, the lead in there, and he had a girlfriend in there or whatnot. And I ended up being the guy that playing pool with him. So can you imagine that? Gee, I'd never been in a bar. I've never been a cowboy, and I've never played pool in a bar drinking a beer. Boy, that was a tough acting role.
Yeah. The great Dave Appleton, the man from Australia, and he was the master of ceremonies, you might remember, in 2023 at the Pro Rodeo Hall of Fame's induction ceremonies that take place every year during the month of July during the Pikes Peak or Bust Rodeo, which plays host to the NFR Open, the championship event of the PRCA circuit system. So, fun conversations with both guys, both of them Hall of Famers, both of them world champions. Thanks to Paul Tierney, thank you to Dave Appleton for their time, and thanks to you for joining us on Legends of the Hall. Brought to you by Wrangler, the official Western Wear Pro Rodeo. Long live Cowboys. God bless everybody. You can find all of our interviews and so much more if you go to our 8 Seconds Media website, click on podcasts. Please like and subscribe to our programs, and you can watch the video of so many of our guests if you go to our YouTube page, and you can find that link at 8secondsmedia.com. Thanks for listening. I'm Steve Kinney.